Succession number 10657, reel 33.
I think you were saying that although you'd been told you were up against German parachute troops, you hadn't appreciated the significance of that information.
No, I don't think I don't think we really, as you say, we didn't repeat this, we didn't appreciate the significance of it. I certainly, at that stage, we certainly didn't realise what a tough nut it was going to be to crack on the other side of the scimitar. Any case, we were all jolly. I doubt whether we heard much about it that night. We were jolly tired. We just wanted to get our heads down, in fact. What happened was that the brigadier had to make a decision. The brigadier was Ronnie Senior. By the time the situation, as I say, it was already dark. The leading troops, the 9th, were dog-tired. It was impossible to make any sensible reconnaissance of crossing places over the scimitar, other than the bridge, which was very important. The 8th Battalion was still 4 hours back up the road, that's us. The 6th Battalion was even further back. And the brigadier decided that he needed time for reconnaissance and also to rest the troops, and planned for the 9th Battalion to attack at 7:30 the next morning. I personally think this was probably a good decision. I don't think that you can push an infantry battalion into the attack in the darkness over ground they've not had an opportunity of looking at, when there is also a river involved and a bridge which you obviously can't get across. So I don't criticise that decision at all. Some people have done. We in fact didn't arrive until 2 o'clock in the morning in the vicinity of Primosale, up on the high ground. We were 1 mile in rear of the 9th Battalion. We were off the road. The troops just flopped down where they were and slept on the hard ground. I established a company headquarters in a farmhouse where I was able to find quite a comfortable kitchen table where I stretched out. But not for long. Because at 4 o'clock there was violent automatic fire and frequent explosions from the area of the 9th Durhams. We immediately stood to, the whole battalion, and we didn't get involved in the action, but next morning we got news of a very short and fierce action when a section of Italian marine armoured cars, this is the Italians again, actually got right through to the battalion headquarter area of the 9th Durhams, and it was only the action of the 9 DLI anti-tank gun crews who fired their anti-tank guns point blank at the armoured cars at little more than a few yards range, hit all of them and set the whole lot on fire. There were very few survivors, and I walked down in the morning to have a look at the whole thing with Philip Hampson, our mortar officer, and it was a pretty awful mess. They'd all been killed or wounded, all the Italians. Their armoured cars were shot up, and some of them were still sort of burning. But it was a very brave attempt to shoot up the 9th Battalion's HQ by these Italians.
What sort of armoured cars were they? Were they heavy or light?
Light armoured cars. Most of the armour that the Italians had was pretty light, actually. It was almost a suicide mission, but it was the anti-tank gun crew's quick reaction to just fire their guns immediately, you know, which did the trick.
These were 6-pounders, presumably.
Two-pounders, I think.
Two-pounders.
Yes, that would have been 2-pounders then, I think. I don't think they'd have used 6. I mean, they might have had 6 with them, but I think it was 2-pounders that did the damage.
How many of the Italian armed cars were there?
I think there were 3 or 4, if I remember rightly.
So it was a troop?
Yes, it'd be about a troop, that's right. But we had a lot of respect for what they'd done, you know. It was quite a brave effort, actually. Well, came the morning, and we knew then that the 9th Durhams were due to attack the bridge at 7:30, supported by 2 field regiments, one of which were the self-propelled guns, and that the 8th Battalion would take over the 9th DLI positions. It was in fact in this area where I'd spent the night in the farmhouse. But I went outside the following morning when the self-propelled guns started manoeuvring actually around the farm buildings. And I said to my sergeant major, "Where's the Fiat?" He said, "Over there." And I looked over in a corner of the sort of farmyard, and there was what was left of the Fiat, completely squashed flat by an SP gun that had reversed and not seen it there and just gone clean over it. And so that was the end of my Fiat. Not that I could have used it again, but that was it.
How had you actually got it up that far? Had you driven it along the road?
I don't suppose I did. I might have used it to have stuck the company wireless in or something like that. But no, I marched with the troops. We would have used it to transport somebody, but it would probably have been, as I say, for the chap with the 18 set who would have kept close up with us, you know.
Was the chap with the 18 set the most heavily burdened man in the company?
Yes, no doubt about that at all. Very heavy, those damn things. He wasn't carrying a lot of the other equipment, but the 18 set on its own is an extremely heavy, heavy, heavy. They were pretty good.
What about the mortars? Weren't they fairly heavy?
2-inch mortars, not as heavy as an 18 set, I don't think. No, easier to carry too, because you can sort of sling, or you can shift them around from hand to hand, that sort of thing.
And 3-inch mortars were in a
3-inch mortars would be, well, we'd still got our carriers, so they would have been with the carriers, that's right. Yeah.
Was it practical to carry a 3-inch mortar by hand, or was it just too heavy?
Pretty heavy thing, actually. You couldn't have carried it on a march by hand. Definitely not. Not for very far, anyway. I wouldn't think. I'm sure you couldn't. Yes, it was soon after 7 o'clock that the priests arrived in our area. The Fiat was flattened. And at 7:35, we moved off. We had to keep clear of the road, which was getting a little bit of shelling. But it didn't cause us any casualties.
What was the ground like then on either side of the road?
Fairly open, I remember. So you could move in more or less open formation.
Was it cornfields or...?
No, it wasn't cornfields. It was...
pasture?
It was open, sort of uncultivated land, I would say. So it was possible to get right off the road. And they did, in fact, drop a few shells near us when we were actually moving to the flank, you know. And I had to I had to keep the chaps going, particularly the new ones who'd never had any experience shell fire before, because they weren't really coming anywhere near us. And those of us who knew could see that, but the new chaps couldn't, including one of my officers, who was very, very worried about it indeed, until I rushed over to him and told him, you know, to not to worry about it. They weren't coming anywhere near us, and to, you know, pull the chaps together, which he did. So that was all right.
How could you tell whether a shell was coming near you or not? Was it just the sound?
Well, and that's where they were bursting, really. You know, they were going over to the to the side. Just. Well, I think we've got got a little bit of shelling, but from the high ground where the 9th had been, we were able to watch the attack. Now, the bridge was clearly visible. The enemy positions on the other side of the river, you couldn't spot anything or any movement. It was very close country, as we shall see later on, and they were in very well-concealed positions. Now, certainly at this stage, we had no knowledge of a sunken road which was beyond the bridge, more or less running parallel with the river, and it was this sunken road that was going to cause us a great deal of trouble at a later stage. But we didn't spot it that morning. Now, on our side of the bridge, The southern bank of the river gave a little cover, but only a very little cover. It was very open, and except for a few scattered trees, there was no cover at all. Now, the 9th DLI companies advanced in open formation, and they immediately got heavy machine gun fire and a lot of casualties before they got to the bank, the southern bank of the river. It was quite an extraordinary thing to watch, really, not very pleasant, because from where we were, it was like watching toy soldiers. You could hear the splatter, you know, the firing, and then you would see them go down, just like toy soldiers would. And it was a grandstand seat that I wish I hadn't had, really. It was not at all pleasant. Only odd platoons got across the cimeter, and the ones that did get over were halted by the paratroops who were in the vineyards immediately on the far side of the river.
Did the mines go right down to the river bank?
Almost to the river bank, yes. Yes, they did, almost right down to the river bank. So the fire was coming, not only from the vineyards, but also from this sunken road, which was some 400 to 500 yards north of the bridge, on the left of the road, which we could not see and had no knowledge of. Now, once the odd platoons that did got over of the river immediately became involved in fierce hand-to-hand fighting. It was a very precarious hold that the 9th had got on the northern bank. It was finally broken, and they were driven back across the river, leaving their dead and most of the wounded in enemy hands. I think they got a little bit of supporting fire from the 4th Armour Brigade tanks. I believe so. I believe some of them tried to go across the bridge, but in the final analysis it was a failure as an attack, and a lot of it has to be put down to the advance towards the brook, towards the river, over this very open ground.
Roughly how far did they have to go in the open? What sort of distance did they have to cover?
I would say 300 to 400 yards, which is quite a long way, actually, when you've got nowhere to go except lie down, you know, just these few trees.
What sort of formation would they be?
Well, they would have been, they went in open formation. They'd have had two platoons up and one back, and the right-hand company two platoons up and one back, and another one in reserve. That would have been it.
And how long do you reckon it took them to actually get over the ground, those that did manage to reach the bank of the river, the south bank?
Well, I think the whole thing was about 2 hours. 1.5 to 2 hours. That's from the time that the 9th Battalion actually moved off until they find themselves back lining the southern bank, which was at 9:30. And I think that they were due to attack at 7:30. So in that period of 2 hours, maybe it took them, I would have thought, 30 to 40 minutes to get down to and across the river, and then the fighting on the other side, and then being driven back. I think that's about all I can say, really. I can't break it down any more than that. I would say that the whole operation started and finished within a 2 hour period.
When they approached the river across the open ground, did they run or were they walking?
I really can't remember that. But unless there was anything, there was a little bank on this side of the river, in fact, which did give cover, and eventually they were able to use the bank to do just that. So once they saw the bank, as they were being fired at, I think they would have broken into a run to have got into the shelter of the bank as quickly as possible. But of course after that they got to wade the river, which was about 4 feet deep, and in some parts much deeper, because shells had exploded and dug a hole in the bed of the river. So they weren't really in the clear, not even when they got to the bank.
How wide was the river?
I think we've got a note about the river here. Um, 400 feet long was the length of the bridge, and I would have thought that the river was about...
The river would be a little bit less.
Yes, be about 200 feet across, something like that. 200, I thought that would have been about it. 100 yards is
about 300 feet.
Yes.
When you say they were under fire, were they under a artillery? Was it mainly machine gun?
Mainly machine gun. Mainly machine gun fire. I think yes, it was. I don't think there was any heavy artillery fire going on at that time. They got some heavy artillery, but it was used against the bridge mainly, and not at that stage of the battle.
And did the 9th Battalion have any support?
I think they had this. They had tank. They had support from, I suppose, probably a troop of tanks or something like that. But the tanks weren't able to go over the bridge, and had no intention of doing so, and could only give them covering fire, I suppose, firing into the vineyards with their Beza guns or something like that.
There was no artillery support then for the 9th?
Yes, there was artillery support for the 9th, actually. Yes, they did have artillery support.
It's odd that they didn't use... Well, they weren't given smoke to...
To get them out again.
To get them across the river in the first place.
Yes, yes.
Smoke might have protected them, if they had smoke laying along the north bank of the river.
That's
then
right.
They could have waded the river.
That's right.
And done their approach. In more secure, more safe.
That's it. Can we just shut it off just for a moment? And I'd okay.
You couldn't actually see any of the German positions there.
No,
from your grandstand position.
No, couldn't see anything at all. I mean, you certainly couldn't see them in the vines, you know. But what I've got here is the topography of the ground, which was taken from the Army Quarterly of October 1944 and written by Brigadier Senior, and I think it gives a very good idea of the ground on the northern side of the cemetery. And it's very important to sort of get hold of this, because this is the key to the whole of what followed, really. Now, we know the bridge was about 400 foot long, 8 foot above the river, which was bordered by reeds. Now, the bridge had a superstructure along either side and on the top of iron girders, and it looked rather like a Meccano bridge. When you went into it, it was rather like going into a tunnel.
It was lattice work, wasn't it?
Lattice work, yes, lattice work. Rather like going into a tunnel. There was nobody to go except jump over the side. Once you were on the bridge, you were really committed to getting to the other side. Now, as we've seen, the south bank had a little cover, but except for these few scattered trees, very, very open indeed. Now, immediately north of the bridge were two small farms, one on either side of the road. That's the Catania Road. Each farm had two or three buildings with a barn. They were quite easy to identify and were used by our artillery as ranging marks, and undoubtedly by the Germans as well. Now, northwards from the bridge, you've got the main road to Catania, absolutely dead straight, no kinks in it of any sort, between two rows of very tall poplar trees, and running along on either side of the road, a ditch. Now, northwards from the river banks, there were thick vineyards, and these vineyards, in fact, did come right down to the river bank, as we'll see later on when A Company crossed. They were dotted with olive trees, and they extended to a depth of some 400 or 500 yards. So the distance was as long as the bridge again, which was the extent of the vineyards. The vines were 3 to 4 feet high and about 3 feet apart. And there were olive trees. The olive trees were thicker near the farms. Now, visibility in the vineyards when lying down was practically nil.
Well, unless you were looking up the rows.
Right, unless you were looking between and along the rows of vines, and then you were all right, where it was not much more than 10 yards. So it's very, very thickly entwined with these vineyards. You could see practically nothing lying down, unless you were lying down and looking along a row.
Do you remember if the vines were on posts or were there wire stretch?
Yes, no, I think I don't think there was any wire, but I think they were on posts in actual fact, yes, because I had a look at them when I went back there some years later. So the situation you've got with these vines extended from the river right back to the sunken road, or just before the sunken road, which was hidden from our view. So a very considerable obstacle. And he goes on to say that on the left of the road, on the far side of the vineyards, was a sunken track known to us as the Sunken Road. It ran parallel to the river, and it was not visible. Nothing in it was visible. When I went back to Primosole in May 1970 to do an exercise with the Malta Brigade, I parked a Fiat 128 saloon in the Sunken Road. I walked back to where our battalion headquarters had been, and I could see no trace of the Fiat at all. It was completely hidden. So that situation isn't very different to what it was in 1943. Around about 9:30 in the morning, the remnants of the 9th Battalion lined the southern bank of the river, where there was, as we've said earlier, a little bit of cover. Any movement on the flat ground brought down heavy mortar fire from the German side. If our tanks approached the bridge, there was an 88 some distance down the Catania Road, which was more or less almost in a direct line with the bridge, and there was no way the tanks were going to get across unless they risked being shot up. So they never got across the bridge. Although the 9th couldn't attack again, they were able to prevent the Germans from placing mines to blow the bridge. So in this respect, they took on the task of the paratroops, the British paratroops, and still they were able to prevent the bridge from being blown. Now, at 10 o'clock, the divisional commander ordered the brigade to attack the bridge again with stronger artillery support. But as we said earlier, the artillery support wasn't all that helpful in the circumstances of a river crossing and the thick vines beyond. The 8th Battalion was told to stand by, the CRO hour 4 o'clock. So Colonel Libwell and Andrew Clark, the CO of the 9th, and the gunner wrecked the bridge and its approaches from all aspects. They came to the conclusion, I think it was everybody was quite clear that a second frontal attack was suicidal, and the prospects looked pretty gloomy for us. That's the 8th Battalion. Anyway, Bob Libwell, our CO, finalised the artillery plan at brigade. Then he made his way back to 8th Battalion headquarters, which was in a cave. The company commanders and the commanders of the supporting arms were waiting for him. Most of us were lying around asleep, with our heads propped on rocks or on packs or something like that. And Bob Lidwell woke us up, started to outline the plan. He hadn't been talking for very long before a stranger appeared in the entrance of the cave. Didn't look as though he'd shaved for a couple of days. He was wearing khaki shirt and trousers, covered in stains and grime. He looked absolutely dog-tired. Sat down next to Bob Lidwell, and he said, "My name's Pearson." And it was, in fact, Lieutenant Colonel Alastair Pearson, DSOMC, commanding the 1st Parachute Battalion, who had been dropped at the bridge originally. He went on to say that, "My name's Pearson. I commanded the paratroops down at the bridge, and I'm told you're attacking this afternoon. I think I can give you a helping hand." And, of course, the information that he was able to give us was absolutely invaluable. He said that there was no way that a direct attack on the bridge could possibly succeed. He pointed out that all the German firepower was concentrated on the bridge and the approaches, but he knew a place 300 yards downstream from the bridge, that's to the left of the bridge, where it was possible to wade across. Now, it could be that the 9th Battalion, some of them had used that crossing place in the morning, but this was something that he knew of, and he knew exactly where it was. And he went on to say, "I'll show your assault companies the way over to the other side." And of course, we thought this was a terrific gesture from a man who'd held the bridge the whole of the previous day under continuous attack, who need take no further part in the operation at all, and could in fact have been on his way back to the rear area with his paratroops if he wanted to be. But he came in and he, you know, offered to help, and we all thought this was marvellous. Anyway, thank goodness we heard soon after that that the attack was off for 4 o'clock in the afternoon. 0 hour was 2:10 a.m. the following morning by the light of a full moon. So Bob Lidwell gave out his orders, his new orders. 1 hour and 20 minutes prior to 0 hour, the gunners would put down artillery concentrations in the area of the bridge and also in the vineyards immediately north of the river. Their artillery would extend for 500 yards to the left of the bridge, so it would encompass the vineyards and also the sunken road, although we still didn't know what a threat the sunken road was. For the last 10 minutes, every gun would be in the bridge area. The barrage would be thickened by a squadron of tanks firing from the low ground south of the river. The Cheshire machine gunners would be on the high ground, way back on the high ground, overlooking the bridge, to give covering support and to fire into the vineyards. 0 hours, as I say, 2:10 a.m. in the morning. A and D companies were to ford the river with Colonel Pearson. Immediately they got the other side, they were to bear right and move through the vineyards and onto the bridge. If the bridge was captured intact, the rest of the battalion and the support arms would cross over the bridge. The idea was to extend the bridgehead and consolidate a position 1,500 yards deep and 2,000 yards wide, which, of course, was never done in the 8th Battalion's time at the bridge. A bridgehead of that size was quite impossible.
Have you any idea why the Colonel wanted that last 10-minute concentration on the immediate area of the bridge?
Well, because on the far side of the bridge you've got these two farmhouses, one on either side. There were, in fact, quite a few Italians in those, not Germans, but there were Italians there, and I think he wanted to neutralise those. That's, as I say, on the far side of the bridge, so that A Company coming along the river bank wouldn't have too difficult a job dealing with them. There were some pillboxes there too, I'm pretty certain, on the far side of the bridge. In fact, I'm almost certain there were. So that was the reason for the last 10 minutes to come down on the When we say area of the bridge, it really means area of the bridge, the northern end, the enemy side.
And the vineyards, were the Cheshires to comb them?
That would have been, yes, because they knew nothing about the sunken road. All they could fire at would be the bridge area itself. But they were firing pretty high, and the trajectory was pretty high, and I would say that they were sweeping the vineyards. I doubt very much whether there was anybody in the vineyards.
Plunging fire then from the
yes,
guns.
That's right, because it was way back on the high ground, and it was going right over the top of a power station, which I come to a little bit later on.
Was there any discussion of the possibility of using smoke as a means of...
Not that I can recollect. Well, it was a moonlight attack. I think perhaps smoke under those circumstances would probably be more of a problem than a help, in actual fact. Anyway, in the late afternoon of that day, where A Company had been on the high ground, was a very good vantage point for officers and NCOs of the 8th Battalion to carry out a recce of the country north of the river. Now, here again, we've got this situation where there was very little movement at all beyond the scimitar. You couldn't pick out the line of the enemy.